Popular Front presents Skeleton Key, a monthly report on contemporary far-right militancy all over the world. Only at patreon.com/popularfront. In this episode, we're speaking to journalist and researcher Pierre Vaux about the planned attacks of two neo-Nazi militant cells in Finland. They were both ready to carry out deadly attacks, both obtained weapons, and they both had connections to esoteric occult Hitlerism. We're going to be talking about two very niche groups in Finland. One is more your kind of traditional neo-Nazi network that in the end was connected to various esoteric occult Hitlerist groups, and the other more modern with 3D printed guns, planning attacks, doing attacks, both violent. Let's talk about this first group. So they don't really have specific names as we know it. So let's talk about this first one that was in Kankanpa in Finland. Who are they?
So the Kankanpa group first came to attention of the police in about 2020, but they'd actually been carrying out, they'd been known locally and connected with assaults since at least 2014. They're still on trial, so I'm not going to mention their names because Finnish media is quite specific about not naming criminal suspects, just in case there's any risk of biasing the trial, but they are easy to identify. In this group, there were 5 people, and they had a history going back to at least 2014 of basically going round and attacking local people and businesses that they are associated with ethnic minorities in this town. And Kankanpa is about 3 hours drive northwest of Helsinki. So in 2014, they did an assault at a hot dog stand and threatened to slit someone's throat and beat someone up with an iron bar. Between 2019 and 2021, there were a series of attacks, often targeting art students in the town, and also particularly singling out anyone of a non-white background who was with the students. Going up and violently beating people, waiting for them outside restaurants and bars and things. So far this is all... It's relatively typical in terms of, you know, a lot of fairly backwater towns will have like a local skinhead group who are just menacing people and, you know, being malevolent. But in January 2020, all 5 of them were detained by the police on firearms and explosives offences. And they were suspected of trying to procure explosive devices and having been connected to the theft of some fertilizer. So this puts it up a notch. However, and this is what's confusing for me reading about this, is the police detained them and then let them go again, and they immediately seem to have gone back to their activity. There was another attack just over a year after they got detained, where they attacked another group of students at a grill on the outskirts of Kankanpa. And in that same month, this is May 2021, they were recorded by the police, who obviously had them under surveillance by now, visiting 2 different clubhouses in Kerava and Murame, 2 other Finnish towns. And these clubhouses were run by an organization called Crew 38. And Crew 38 is a sort of a branch in some way of the Hammerskins. And I know Hammerskins have come up on the podcast quite a few times before, especially in connection to Rise Above movement. I know Ali's talked a lot about them, but they are sort of one of the older big American white supremacist gangs, effectively. And they have a huge reach in Europe, and they're particularly associated in Europe with, for example, they run an MMA tournament in Germany called the Kampf der Nibelungen, and that attracts sort of Nazis, including people from Blood and Honor and Combat 18 from all over Europe, come and attend that. So they're a big international network, and although they're older and so people give them a lot less attention than the sort of very online, you know, people like Atom Boffin who make a lot of, you know, attention to graphics and stuff. The Hammerskins are actually a really dangerous and really important network when you look at these international far-right groups. And in the same way, Rise Above Movement is almost an offshoot of Hammerskins.
Right. The Hammerskins would be comparable more to like the Aryan Brotherhood as a really fully legitimized, violent neo-Nazi gang. They're not just like a political movement. They're like serious criminals, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're not movementarians having conferences like some of the other guys we'll talk about in this. So they're going to two of their clubhouses and having meetings. We don't know that they were ever patched up and members of them. We've not seen any evidence of that, but they were clearly talking to these guys frequently. A few months after that, they actually founded an organization. All five people who were later arrested founded a kickboxing club called Soul Sport. And it's so you can actually trace who the people that were detained, even though they're not named in media, because you can see the kickboxing association that they created and the legal records attached to that. And it was only 2 months after that, so December 3rd, 2021, that they were arrested in a huge operation involving counterterrorism police with Europol support. So what had happened in the meantime? So we know that they were engaging with other known far-right groups who are dangerous, like Hammerskins, but also the police in the intelligence they were collected began to suspect that they had been connected to a 2015 incident, so like way back before they first came on the police radar, where a refugee reception centre in Ninisalo nearby was burned down shortly before it was due to open in an arson attack. And the police, when they eventually raided these guys, found that they had been sort of discussing and plant details of the refugee centre and what was there. So what they found in the end was that they'd collected a lot of weaponry, and that included dynamite, fertilisers, Kalashnikov pattern weapons, shotguns, rifles, pistols. So again, we're not talking 3D printing or anything. We're just collecting a lot of weaponry. And I think one of the other things that the police mentioned that I wonder if that was an indicator for them was that the main guy in this group had recently had a tattoo done which said action, not words, in Latin. And I think, yeah, there was a worry that he was going to shift it up a gear. Now, the thing is, even though this is like a very old school group in terms of its connections with much older net groups like Hammerskins, it's doing everything offline for the most part. It's not very branded. They are actually all quite young. So the main suspects, the main guy was born in 96, other ones in 95, 1998. 1996, they're quite young people. They're in their 20s. And they are influenced by a lot of very online stuff. But as far as we can tell, the police haven't disclosed their online identities, and I've not managed to find them. Which doesn't mean they didn't have them. And they've said that they did produce propaganda videos that the police found. But it's that they're quite careful in how they're doing it. They seem to have deliberately avoided joining any group or any movement in a public way. And when you see what they were influenced by, and that appears to be siege culture, and particularly two other texts that the police found on it, like one was publications from the Nordic Resistance Movement, which is another big, very violent neo-Nazi group operating across Scandinavia. And they've been connected to a series of bombings, for example, that happened in Sweden in 2017. And the other was this book called, and I'll translate it to English rather than butchering the Finnish, 21 Paths to the Kingdom of Darkness. And This book is basically an Order of Nine Angles Reader's Digest. It's very simple. It's sort of, it's quite a short book. I've translated it with Deepal into English to have a read. It's like basically like a sort of like a student notes like summary of what's in Hostia and Naus. Like, here's what you need to do for the rituals. This is culling. This is why it's important. This is the kind of overall struggle. But it doesn't go into like Star Game and all the esoterica and stuff in so much detail. It's like very basic guide to the Order of Nine Angles.
So this is the Kankanpa group. They would have started out very secretive, as we know, because there's just almost no traces of them online. But where would they have got this from? Obviously online. This isn't the sort of thing you just hear about in passing. Now, I know that various neo-Nazi groups are rife with this esoteric Hitlerism, this Order of Nine Angles, far-right occultism. But they wouldn't just pick this up randomly, especially not at the age they are. To be honest, the age they are, they're like mid to late 20s. They almost definitely have gotten this from various different internet portals, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the most telling thing is that one of the tattoos that the leader had on his neck was 333.
Ah, Lieber.
Exactly, exactly. So for anyone who's not familiar with this, Lieber 333 is a book published by an American branch of the Order of Nine Angles called Temple of Blood. And that actually published and written by Joshua Caleb Sutter, who is an FBI informant, it turned out. So this book is paid for by the FBI, and it's very popular in the extreme far right.
Yeah, and the Lieber 333 shit is like a derivative from Aleister Crowley, which again leads back to this kind of esoteric stuff. Not that Crowley was like a fascist or a neo-Nazi or anything, but they have taken on board all of this stuff for themselves, the Nazis have.
Yeah, and like it's Temple of Blood is borrowing from all sorts of places. Like they were previously a DPR, a North Korean sort of affiliate group, and before that they were Hare Krishnas. Actually, there's a lot of former Hare Krishnas in the far right. That's, we can save that for another day.
There's the whole like accelerate, burn it down for the next eon type thing.
Yeah, ride the Kali Yuga. Yeah, all the guys who founded, half the guys who founded Arctos were living in an ashram in India when they set it up.
Anyone that doesn't know, Arctos is a far-right book publisher.
Yeah, and again, very much in this kind of more esoteric space. In fact, there is an Arctos connection to this that we can talk about. So we know that they were in communications with at least one person from Nordic Resistance Movement. We know that the police believe that they were talking to one of the people who'd taken part in a stabbing at a library attack. And I think from talking to sources in Finland, that one of the possible people that that was is a guy called Sebastian Lamza, who is a member of Nordic Resistance Movement, took part in his stabbing. And it's believed, it's implied that one of those three people was talking to the leader of the Kankanpa group. And they were reading and clearly very into, at least one of them was very into, Order of Nine Angles and Temple of Blood. Now, that book, 21 Paths to the Kingdom of Darkness, was published by a group called the Luhi Luzi, the Luhi Lodge. So Luhi is an ancient Finnish pagan deity or spirit. And Luhi Luzi is part of, it claims to be the Finnish chapter of an organization called the Black Order. Now, the Black Order was founded back in the early 90s in New Zealand by a guy called Kerry Bolton. Kerry Bolton he used to be in the Temple of Set, which was an offshoot of the Temple of Anton LaVey's Temple of Satan. He was in correspondence with David Myatt, who created the Order of Nine Angles in the late 80s and early 90s. And so in the 90s, he created this Black Order group. And it went dormant for a long time in the 90s, but it really seemed to come back a few years ago, and very especially in Finland. So they have a magazine they publish called Musta Kivi, the Black Stone. They've got a website. The website has two domains that I found. One called blackorder.org and the other one is Nexion88, just in case it wasn't clear what their affiliations were. Sorry for reading. if you've not been following the Order of Nine Angle stuff, Nexion is the kind of coven of Order of Nine Angles members, and 88 being numeric cipher for Heil Hitler, being the eighth letter of the alphabet. And yeah, this organization claims to have, and obviously I use the word claims to have because most of the time when we look at these Nexions that they proclaim around the world, they're just one guy on the internet claiming to have followers and activities. So they claim to have branches in Finland, Sweden, and even Patagonia. But this group is interesting. So the Finnish branch is really interesting. They were actually promoting real-life action, which is unusual. It's really unusual for Order of Nine Angles stuff to actually get involved in anything. If you read, I mean, you'll know this, Jake, but like reading Order of Nine Angles stuff is mostly concerned with pathé, matho, you know, all of this kind of very arcane spiritual terminology and stuff. It's very rare for them to actually talk about anything political happening right here and now.
Yeah, they don't really get involved. They kind of prime and prep people to go out and get involved and do stuff. But they themselves are very much sitting in the house talking or like arguing on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. Usually with themselves under different pseudonyms.
Yeah, yeah.
So Black Order were actually called... So around this time, so we're talking 2021. Do you remember there was like a really big border crisis developing on the borders of Belarus with the European Union countries around it?
Yeah, and they had various militia groups. I think BNO Shipko was one or similar groups like that.
Yes. So, and like to give listeners context, so the Belarusian authorities were basically advertising on things like Iraqi Facebook groups and stuff, telling people that there was a safe route to enter the European Union through Belarus. People were coming, and then they were coming to Minsk, and then the police were effectively picking them up, driving them to the border, and then refusing to let them walk back. And obviously then putting them in a horrible position of being stuck between Belarusian riot police and Polish or Lithuanian border guards who wouldn't let them in and, you know, were incredibly aggressive to them as well. So it's just a really, really grim, like horrible, cynical use of people. Anyway, in 2021, the Black Order actually gave a load of interviews to a Finnish neo-Nazi website called Partisani, calling for Finnish nationalists to come to Lithuania to, in their words, counter an avalanche of invaders. And so they were actually recruiting people to come in real life to come and patrol the border, which is not... Yeah, that's not normal for 09A type activities.
No, it's extremely unusual.
Yeah, and they even released video of people wearing their insignia and camo on the border. Supposedly on the border. Like, you know, patrolling with binoculars and stuff. So this is a much more active cell than we're used to looking at. And they produced a huge amount of documentation. It's got this book, so got 21 Paths to the Kingdom of Darkness, you've got Muster Kivi going out, loads of interviews being given all over this, all done under the name of Fenrir, which is actually the name of what used to be the magazine. Is it still the magazine of the 09A?
It was the magazine of the 09A, then it got rebooted last year, and then the lad that rebooted it basically vanished because he got worried that he was about to get done for terrorism and then pretended that he was no longer running on A. Yeah, so it's kind of fell apart again. But yeah, Fenrir, there was dozens and dozens of copies of it.
Yeah, like the whole, like, it's not an organization. It's a religion, it's a spiritual movement.
Right, exactly. But you have like organized militant cells all over the world anyway.
Yes. So this group... that's the only like visible connection we've got is to this organization that's doing all this stuff and being quite surprisingly active. And the police round them up, and that trial is actually still going on. From what the police said, they've refused to actually state who their targets were, but they believe that they were preparing like violent attacks on a number of specific violent attacks. But they've been very close-lipped about this, and I think That's because I'm assuming it involves security service connections or something for the sources of what they were doing once they were under surveillance. But it's a very interesting case. And they were clearly very well prepared and like they were very serious about this. And the fact that they'd obviously must have had an online presence, but the fact that they'd managed to keep it fairly low key while doing all of this and, you know, carrying out violent attacks in their local area means that they're the kind of... Cause so many cases that turn up are just, you know, some idiot running a Telegram channel and it's, you know, do you remember, like, the leader of the Feuerkrieg division that turned out to be that 13-year-old boy in Estonia called Commander?
Yeah, yeah. He was threatening me and it was so funny when I found out he was 13. It's like, bro, go to school, like, for fuck's sake.
They're a kid. So these guys were being so much more... This is the kind of group that I think needs to be taken very seriously. And the fact that they didn't, as far as the... And the police have said they were not members, as far as they're aware, of any other organisation. That means that they're really taking on board a lot of the sort of instructions given by James Mason, the author of Siege, which is sort of... the compendium of a zine, of a Nazi zine he published in the late 60s and 70s, which is very much calling for leaderless, you know, it decentralized activity. Don't form movements, reject the movementarian thing, you know, don't join a party, don't do political activity, just carry out terrorism. Go and kill people, be violent. You know, do engage the, you know, adopting a lot of the old left-wing stuff, like it's very Gramsci influenced. But this is very much taking that to heart in a way that most of the groups, a lot of the groups we look at kind of talk about that a lot, but do the exact opposite by trying to build a Telegram presence.
Well, this group was kind of the Kankanpar group was basically moving in secret, right?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is we can't rule out that they, so for example, there are spaces they could have been active in that I've not managed to find. So I've not found any mention of them on Iron March, for example, or on distros from like Nazi record labels. But there are also, for example, there used to be a really big far-right forum in Finland that was on tour called, I'm going to butcher this, Suojeluskunta, which I think is named after the sort of white guard or the civil guard, so not necessarily meaning racial here, it's more is from the sort of civil war era when they broke when they left the Russian Empire. And that forum was hosted on tour, it was discussed on Iron March as a place that other people talk about stuff, but it's complete, it's a the website's down and it was on tour, so there's no archive or anything or way to explore whether or not they had accounts on there. So I'm not going to rule out that they, I don't want to explicitly rule out that they had anything, but compared to a lot of people that we investigate, you know, it's often really, really easy to find people's online presences. And in this case, it's not.
Yeah. Normally neo-Nazi groups, they just can't shut their mouths. But this one, interesting, they were very much plotting in secret. And I mean, like we said, they had fertilizer weapons. That's some serious stuff.
So they, in terms of their discipline, they're one of the things that the police said, and this is interesting, and this I think is maybe an example of how organized they were. There was previously a sixth member who was expelled from the group, and the police found video on one of their phones where they were abusing him, and they forced him to pay them €1,000 as compensation for whatever violation he'd committed. So it's got like proper gang group discipline going on inside it. It's properly regimented. It's not, which again speaks to like these guys are very serious. They're actually doing this properly. And the only other connection that's possible, when I've looked and I've sort of, you know, asked contacts and stuff and not managed to find any information on exactly when this happened or who he met with, but one of the members of it did also travel to Russia at some point, but the police haven't said anything beyond that. But I don't want to draw too much attention. I don't want to make that into a red herring because, you know, like, it's, you remember when, for example, after the Christchurch attack, everyone was like, oh, he'd said he'd been to half these countries in Europe, therefore he must have been trained by Azov or something. And yeah, like, it's, I don't want to turn that into too much of a lead, but like, yeah, that's the only other link I can think of for these guys.
Yeah, so these guys were a little more secret, the Kankan Power Group, very serious, involved in organized white supremacist gangs. The other group we're going to talk about, the Lahti Group, they're as serious, in my opinion, but very different methods and more new school, if you like. However, they were also linked to esoteric Hitlerism as well, right? Let's start at the beginning with this other group. So the Lahti Group, the two are not connected, but they are connected in the way that they're both militant neo-Nazi groups in Finland that recently got caught for planning deadly attacks. So yeah, tell us about the Lahti Group. Again, doesn't really have a proper name. We heard there's some, maybe one of them called it White Cell at some point, but that might just be some made up bullshit. So let's call it the Lahti Group.
Yeah. During interrogation, the leader of this group told police he was a member of a group called White Ops, but that never appears.
White Ops, that's it. Yeah.
It never manifested in any way whatsoever. So this group, the arrests for this group happened much more recently. So this was in July 2023, so July last year, and they were already convicted by October, so very different case. And like, you can see, like, the criminal investigation of it proceeded in a very different way to the other one. And the police were, it's interesting that from the police, it seems that this was not based on security service intelligence, nor did it use any of the new powers the government got under a relatively recent security bill. So I think this came, and considering this one was very easy for journalists that I spoke to and myself to find information on, I think this was based on the police just seeing what these people were saying online and realizing what they were up to and therefore going after them. So it's a very different case. Now, this group, what's amazing about this is that the main guy who's the leader of it, and there's four people in this group, was actually very high profile. He had a Twitter account in his own name, posted loads. He was actually a candidate for municipal elections for the party called Power Suomalaiset. So used to be called True Finns. It's now just called The Finns. And it's a Nazi, I mean, it's far right, very far right political party that's now, since the 2023 elections in Finland, in coalition government. So Nyman has this kind of, that's his name, William Nyman, has this very kind of suited and professional appearance. So he was involved in he stood as a candidate for the elections, was involved in lots of conferences, and it's very much that kind of pseudo-intellectual end of the Nazi spectrum. So like in April 2019, he was named as an organizer of this thing called the Second Awakening Conference in Helsinki. Now, Second Awakening didn't actually take place in Helsinki in the end because of the amount of attention it was drawing, and also particularly because a guy called Jared Taylor was due to speak and actually was refused to be allowed to move through the Schengen zone once he arrived in Europe. And Jared Taylor, this guy's the speaker, was he's an American sort of scientific racist. You know, the kind of scumbags who pull out crime stats and IQ charts and use them to try and claim that there's like inherent differences in people because of their ethnicity.
It's like the modern day measuring head type.
Exactly. And it's like bullshit because obviously it ignores socioeconomic factors and sampling bias and all the other stuff.
It just sees the whole world in a vacuum without context as well, just so it fits their kind of argument.
Yeah, it's gross. And he's again very popular with the alt-right. So he used to do a lot of stuff with Spencer. What's his name? I always forget his name. I forgot him last time we spoke.
Yeah, it's Richard Spencer.
Yes, Richard Spencer, the Heil Trump guy. So Jared Taylor is very much, he runs a sort of journal called the Occidental Review. Like, he was supposed to talk at this forum. So was Frode Midtjord, who's a Danish neo-Nazi, another American guy called Kevin MacDonald, and Olena Semenyaka, who is the international secretary of the Azov National Corps, which is the political wing, which is, I suppose, formally, at least on paper, supposedly separated from the Ukrainian National Guard unit, which is the Azov Regiment. So it's the sort of political street movement end of the Azov movement. And she's their international secretary. So she was supposed to be speaking at this. And he was going, so he was organizing that. He also went to Estonia to another conference with these exact same people, took a selfie with Jared Taylor, posed around. So he's very, so this Niemann guy is, again, it's the kind of the conferences, the like public political, or I guess they like to use the words metapolitical end of Nazis. So totally different from the Kankanpa group. We're not talking, you know, street thugs going and intimidating students outside restaurants at night. It's like the, you know, I'm going to wear a suit and start talking about how interesting Evola is or something on stage.
Yeah, they want to be intellectual Hitler types.
Exactly. But at the same time, in the same group, there's another guy. And so bear in mind, Niemann is like, he's born in 1994 again. So he's another young guy. Mean the other two guys in his organization are 26 and what year was that guy born? Yeah, 25, I think. Whereas the fourth guy, Jyrki Niemi, is 66 years old and hanging out in the same group. And was arrested and charged under the same acts. And his name, he was much more of an old school Nazi. He was the founder of the Finnish branch of the English Defence League. So that's the one that it was formed in the UK originally by Tommy Robinson. And he is like very like in his in the photos I've seen of him sort of dressed in biker leathers and stuff. So he's much more, although I couldn't make out a particular patch. So he's, yeah, very different end of the spectrum, visually at least, from Niemann and his kind of pseudo-intellectual, like, conference circuit stuff. But they're all part of this same little cell. Now, what the police say what was going on is that this guy, Jyrki Niemi, who used to be called Vari, meaning grandpa, was actually able to procure the home addresses of lots of Finnish politicians. And we know that already a couple of years before the whole group was arrested, back in December 2021, he was accused of sending the home address of Finland's interior minister and prosecutor general to another Nazi guy called Tero Ala Tuonen, who is the chair of a fascist group called Nationalist Alliance and also former member of a thing called Soldiers of Odin, which we'll come back to. So, and supposedly the addresses were being provided so these people could be intimidated. Now, according to the police, inside the Lahti group, this same grandpa guy was getting, was providing a whole list of addresses that they were then discussing and putting into a list to plan to kill. And so they were actually ranking them and discussing how they wanted to go after them. And this included people like the interior minister, and also addresses for things like anarchist squats, left-wing bookshops, and also even this one stuck out as odd to me, the European Centre of Excellence for Countering Hybrid Threats, which is like one of those very ridiculously named counter, an institution the EU created, and it's based in Finland, for countering like Russian hybrid warfare and influence operations, which is an odd one. It's an odd one to include in that list.
But it's even stranger that they have like this kind of semi-official political face and then this old man basically setting up what could be considered like the militant wing of it, right?
Exactly. And to get the to get that sort of militant wing going, what they started doing, and from about August 2022 onwards, they started building and testing 3D printed weapons. So what they famously did with this is including the FGC-9, which you've obviously done a whole documentary on and a lot of work on. So they started filming videos of themselves. One of the members of it shot his cat and filmed himself doing it. He claimed the cat was ill.
That's fucking disgusting. That's absolutely disgusting, but there you go.
Yeah, and so they had a kill list, and they were building and testing weapons and, you know, killing animals with them. They started filming videos themselves in the following months. At least one member of it created a channel on Odyssey, which is a sort of it's one of those video sites, a bit like BitChute or Rumble, where you can pretty much post anything without getting taken down. In which he had a channel called Yoho Waffen. And Yoho is just like a sort of a Finnish 4chan equivalent term. I can't quite describe what it means, but it's a sort of meaningless, like, silly term. But the Waffen obviously derives from Atomwaffen division. And on it, he was posting schematics as he was improving the 3D printer. I think he was improving the receiver or something, and posting different designs as he was working through it, and the 3D schemer on there, and posting videos of themselves Sieg Heiling, shooting up a mail box that he said belonged to a black person. Also posting a video of solidarity with the Kankanpa suspects after they were arrested.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it kind of, you can see like a number of things coming together on this that are interesting. So this is like very noisy and very messy. Now, on his public side of it, Wilhelm Niemann never, ever disclosed anything like militant. It was always that kind of alt-right, snarky, mocking comments about liberals and immigration, and very much a kind of political troll account. Meanwhile, it's getting quite extensive offline, and what happens is that the police infiltrate a Telegram group. And the Telegram group was called Accelerationist Discussion, in Finnish, obviously. And they found that Niemann was on it, and his username in it was Kahen Kilon Siege, so like 2 kilo siege. Like, he's a reference to James Mason's siege scene and book. And in that chat group, he was discussing the need to basically introduce extreme violence in Finnish society to shock it into action. So it's making it clear, like, violence was their aim and what they wanted to do. And he was talking in it with another account on there called Herakansa. And in that account, well, basically, Herakansa is talking a lot about that same book we talked about earlier, 21 Paths to the Realm of Darkness, and quoting David Meyer and stuff, and using it as a sort of intellectual justification for killing. So we know that they were talking seriously about this stuff. When the police eventually raided them, yes, they found a copy of this book in Niemann's possession again. So you can see the same influence going through. Now, what's really interesting, though, is at the same time this was happening, so we're talking January 2023 is where they're in the chat room. They're talking about how successful they've been printing 3D firearms and the need to kill lots of people in order to push Finnish. You know, I guess the aim is, you think back to like the Aryan Nations and everyone back in the 80s and 90s was always this Rahowa racial, you know, we destabilize society. Oh, Turner Diaries even, like, destabilize society in order to create a race war. That's still like the core of, like, everyone gets excited about accelerationism as a term now, but it's really just the same idea repackaged. But that's in January. In February 2023, so just as the election is really getting ramping up before the election in Finland, a load of packages start arriving at left-wing parties in Finland at their headquarters. So that's the Left League, the Social Democrats, and the Greens. And these packages all trigger huge security alerts because they contain like wire and tubes and stuff made up to look like bombs. Luckily, none of them turn out to be real bombs, so no one's harmed. But this obviously triggers a huge police investigation. So by the end of March, the police make an arrest in connection with the fake bombs. At exactly the same time as that, that Herakansa guy vanishes from the Telegram chat and stops posting anything in there. And the other people in there start asking, like, oh, maybe he's been arrested. Now, the guy that they arrested was eventually named. And again, we can't say for sure he's Herakansa, but the timing's indicative of this. And the police suspect that this is his account, was a guy called Marko Merettävuo. Now, like Vilim Niman, he was a member of Perussuomalaiset, the True Finns. And in fact, he was actually one of their more public people because he was regularly wrote blogs on their website, you know, opining on various subjects. And he claims to be a sort of security expert. And he's accused, he's still awaiting trial at the moment, of running a fake letter bombing campaign to left wing parties, as well as being an Order of Nine Angles guy. So what he was found to do is he was running several accounts on TikTok and Instagram called Satan and Lapset, like Satan's Children, which are amazingly he's still posting even after being arrested, because he's obviously out on bail and he's still No, he's still posting loads of videos on there. And it's all just pure 09A stuff. Spooky graphics and, you know, footage of, like, rituals and skulls and shit mixed with paintings by, what's his name, Christos Beast, including his imagery in it. So this guy was in comms with them, but they still didn't arrest the Lahti group until July afterwards. So it took several... It's clearly, once they arrested him, his communications, and I guess the devices they seized off him, opened up what was actually going on in the remainder of the group, and then they moved quickly on the whole group. So what they found with these guys, is a large cache of 3D printed weapons, and again, this kill list for trying to go through and assassinate politicians that they didn't like. So what's scary about this, though, is that these guys ended up getting into power eventually, because they're two members of a party that in the following election won and entered into coalition government and got half the ministerial posts. So it's not like they've been punished for this in a way. Obviously, these guys have, but the movement has... It's not suffered as a result of this. And these guys had so many more connections visible. And like their video channels, like that one on Odyssey is still up. Niman's channel is still up. This Marko Merettävuo's channels is still up. And for example, we can see what other groups they're in. So I used a tool to search through other people's Telegram account memberships. And what I found is that Niman was also a member of that same Soldiers of Odin chat group, the one that Tera Alatuun and the guy that Grandpa had sent addresses to a year back in 2021. So there's a lot of overlap with different little groups. Niman is also a member of a thing called Suomen Sisu, which is a sort of more established, old-school Finnish ultra-nationalist group. And that's the same organization that the current True Finn Speaker of Parliament used to be a member of himself. So it's really closely intertwined with the establishment now in Finland. It's really quite scary in that sense.
It's closely linked.
Exactly. And like, so Merettävuo, he penned an article that was published on the True Finns website in June. So this is after he'd first got detained by the police, but I guess before he was named publicly. He penned an article saying that there should be restriction of freedom of the press in Finland because of, and naming specific journalists, liberal journalists' cruel vilification and bias against the far right by associating them with Nazis. And like saying that, yeah, they needed to change the constitution to allow, you know, to stop this like cruel, yeah, the bias of the left. While he'd just been detained for like sending bombs. Fake bombs to...
And he's still on bail, right?
Yeah, he's still on bail. He's still posting.
This guy's crazy.
Yeah, it's completely... But this guy is absolutely mental when you look at him. So he is a contributor to another magazine, to another online far-right website called Sarastus, which also helped organize those awakening conferences with people like Semenyaka and stuff. He's very embedded... He's, again, in that same circle of conferences... pseudo-intellectual bullshit long articles and journals, and he also wrote a novel, a semi-autobiographical novel about himself, where it's all like masked about his awakening and realizing of how like the joy of basically it's an O9A inspired sort of Nazi Satanist autobiography where he's talking about realizing, you know, his awakening of the power of dark magic and stuff. And the suspicion is, from people I've spoken to, but no one, it's not confirmed, the suspicion, given the amount he talks about O9A stuff and the specific references that he uses, that he may well be at least part of, if not the head of, the Finnish branch of the Black Order. Because there are certain similarities in the writing style between 21 Paths to the Realm of Darkness and like some of his other stuff and the materials they produced. It's... Yeah, so like some journalists I've spoken to in Finland do think there's a chance that he might be that Fenrir guy.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of evidence, not proof, but there's evidence that definitely points towards this fellow.
Yeah, and he's got an insane amount of production online. Like, he'll even post videos. So there'll be, like, dodgy accounts that turn up and post videos about him, just naming, oh, philosopher in Finland, Marko Merritt-Vuro, says this, as well as talking about Nick Land and, you know, Mencius Moldbug, Curtis Yarvin. He loves Curtis Yarvin.
Of course he does.
Yeah, like, NRX, neo-aristocratic bullshit. And he's... So he's very highly, he's strongly suspicious. I think there's a good chance that this guy is one of the leaders of an O9A Nexian, of which Niemann is a member, and possibly, if not a member, but certainly reading this shit very enthusiastically and taking it into action, the guy who was the leader of the Kankanpää set. And again, this guy is very much like tweed jacketed, like moly looking guy who is like, again, posits himself as an academic and an intellectual very much. What's also weird, though, is that there's like, and this is something I think we've talked about it before on Popular Front, but I think it's also like it's going to become ever bigger an issue in the European far right is. These groups, and even inside cells, show the like divide that is on the European far right over Russia and Ukraine. So obviously, for years, the Russian state and Russian like para-state, like semi-state people, like, you know, parties that aren't the government but are approved by the government, like LDPR, have been funneling money and support and, you know, inviting people to conferences from all over the European far right for decades. So the tradition, the established European far right politically, you know, people like Nick Griffin, Roberto Fiori, all of that lot are totally very much Kremlin aligned and they're all very pro-Russian on this stuff. The younger ones, I think Ukraine, because as of after they got cut off from that old network, they all used to be in that same pro-Russian, not pro-Russian, but in the same circles with the pro-Russian ones. they obviously had to build their, they were on a big trailblazing campaign to build their own brand and establish those and rebuild those international networks, which is why they made such a big public effort of doing it. And also, I think for young Nazis, especially of the more militant type, like, I mean, and it makes sense, Ukraine's just got a much, the Azov side and the Ukrainian sort of defense of its country against the Russians is just much more romantically appealing as a story to the far right than the Russian side of it. Which makes sense. I mean, it's like, it's you know, like, oh, struggle defending your land against a foreign invader. It's what they all wish they could do anyway.
Yeah, and there's a lot more lore there. There's a lot more cool-looking graphics. There's a lot more culture building within Azov as opposed to, like, you know, perceptively stiff, you know, a Russian imperialist movement or something like that.
Exactly. And especially is when, even though the Russians have got loads of, like, full-on swastika-wearing Nazis fighting on their side, the Russian government is saying this is an anti-fascist military operation. That's not going to help. So, Niemann is obviously, he's very, like, outspokenly pro-Ukrainian and anti-Russian, and he's, you know, doing, he's done conferences with Semenyaka. Marco Meritvuo is actually, you know, has done interviews with Intermarium Support Group, which is run by Olena Semenyaka, and has, like, covered glowingly her appearances in the Azov movement. The Black Order stuff on the border with Lithuania was also, it wasn't explicitly, but, you know, if you read, you know, the context of the way it was being perceived in Lithuania and Estonia and Finland was that this was a Russian operation that they were resisting. Although, obviously, there's a reflexive control element where there's some of the far-right groups that mobilized around that. Some of them, I'm not going to go into it because it's too long-winded for this now, but some of those groups themselves had Russian connections as well. Because, obviously, that's the way it works. You take both sides of it simultaneously. It's like with the refugee crisis in the Mediterranean where you bomb the shit out of people in Syria in order to drive them into the sea while at the same time funding the fascist parties that are getting that are whipping up anger against those refugees. Yeah, it's really, really horrible. So those guys are pro-Ukrainian. Simultaneously, two of the other guys in the Lahti cell, Grandpa, Yurki Niemi, he was very, very, I love Russia. Russia is like the savior of the future. He's all over Vkontakte here, the Russian equivalent of Facebook. And this other guy, Petteri Suiki, he was actually emailing Yanis Putkonen, who I think you interviewed in 2014 or 2015 for Vice.
Yeah, I had the displeasure of spending about 3 or 4 days with him in the DNR. Absolute nutcase, complete nutcase.
Well, he's like, I can't remember if he was already at that point or since then. He became like the head of the Donny Press, like DNR propaganda rag.
He was, yeah. He was the, he was like the guy that took around foreigners as well, like foreign journalists, and he would basically assign you a minder and he would mostly be there as well. And they just take you on this stupid press tour, like very North Korea-esque. And we went there to report in the DNR and like, that's what we got. But luckily we kind of very quickly sussed like this is so orchestrated and basically made a film about the orchestrating of the fake press tour and the kind of bullshit they're trying to push. And he was very angry about that, but he thinks he's a very clever guy, but he was a super, super ultra nationalist Finnish guy. And he was wearing like a Finnish badge and everything. And he was saying to us how disappointed he is that his government isn't standing with Russia and all of this stuff. And there was no sign of any kind of quasi-communism from him, as, you know, the DNR pretends that they are. He was a full-on, like, right-wing ultra-nationalist fellow.
Yeah, was that the one where they staged a shelling attack or something?
That's right, yeah. They pretended that we got shelled, which was really odd, yeah.
So this guy, I mean, he's still there now. So, like, he appeared as a fake observer during the, you know, obviously completely illegitimate elections they claimed to run a couple of back in September. But this guy in Finland, Suiki, emailed him asking about how to volunteer to fight on the DNR side, to join the DNR to fight. At the same time, another member of Lahti, so the fourth one that we've not talked about so much, this other guy, Tuukka Karankanta, He also emailed him, but he emailed him trying to bait him basically into talking about this group as an awful Finnish Nazi group. So the police haven't disclosed what he said to them, but they said that this guy hated the Russians. The other two guys loved the Russians. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And I think Putkonen was one of... For what the one who hated the Russians, he emailed Putkonen, and the other one he at least drafted an email to was Johan Backman, who is awful, awful neo-Stalinist. Like, again, I think he pretty much lives in Russia now. He was convicted of, like, harassing, I think it was sexually harassing or just, like, stalking a journalist for Ille a couple of years ago. Like, a total scumbag. And it looks like this guy, Tuukka Karankanta, emails these two because he thinks they're the two most high-profile pro-Russian people from Finland. I'm going to email them and, like, say something that will make them sort of make a noise about us to raise our profile. Meanwhile, the other guy's emailing them saying, oh, how do I come and join you? So it's crazy. It's completely all over the place. There's no, that, like, this issue, I think, is going to be the big split. But it's amazing that they actually managed to operate in the same group together, especially if they're targeting the European Centre for Countering Hybrid Warfare, which is a unit specifically set up to deal with the Russian threat.
I think this Lahti group really kind of sums up a lot of the more messy far-right militant groups these days. So you've got siege culture, ideology, accelerationist, blah, blah, lone wolf stuff. You've got esoteric occultist fascism with O9A influence. You've got some old fella who can't let it die, helping them get 3D printed guns. And then within that, you've got one group that, you know, prefers Russia and one group that prefers Ukraine. And it's in Finland. I mean, it's like the four lions of fascism, but it's not funny because they were literally planning attacks and had actually done attacks, you know, intimidation attacks, sure, but they shot people's mailboxes. They'd built guns. They were planning to go and kill people to, in their mind, start a race war.
Yeah, and like I think that if you're willing to kill your own pet and film it for shits and giggles, then you're quite capable. Then it makes you much more capable of killing people.
No, completely. If you can kill your own pet, you can kill anybody. You know, that's just twisted.
Yeah, and like thinking back to like people like Milchikov and got internet fame originally for decapitating puppies and stuff and Zeke Eiling with it.
Yeah, that was the Russian main guy in Rusich, the Russian far-right group fighting for the DNR right now. So the Lahti group, they got convicted, right? How long did they get?
Not very long, actually. Finland has a very sort of liberal justice system. So let me see. He was convicted for firearms and terror offences, but some of them, so like Grandpa wasn't convicted, he was convicted on much more minor charges, even though he'd been the one who'd provided the names and the addresses of their targets, which you'd imagine would be, you know, quite a serious aspect. So hold on a second, let me bring this up. I have to have an edit, I guess. I just need to bring it up because I've not got it to hand. Sorry about this. Because I'd put the wrong link in my notes document for where I'd had the bit about sentencing. So Wilhelm Niemann was sentenced to 3 years and 4 months for aggregated firearms crimes committed with terrorist intent, planning a terrorist attack, and also drug charges, which they haven't gone into detail on. The other two younger ones, one was, again, this is the odd thing with, so we know that the other two were called Petri Suiki and Tuukka Karankanta, but none of the reporting names the other suspects apart from Niemann. And I've spoken to journalists in Finland who worked on this case, and it's not even a police requirement. It's just a media convention. So that's why I'm happy to name those people, but it's becomes a bit of a game where when you're doing research into this, you've got to keep notes, and like I use like a network map to map it out. It's like Cluedo. I know that one was born in 1996 and he was charged with this one. And then you read a bit later, like, oh, another man who was born in 1996, his brother, born in 2001. So you have to, like, map it out like that.
All just because they won't name them, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. So Niemann gets 3 years, 4 months. The guy born in 1996, so that would make him 21... Okay, the guy born in 1996 received 1 year and 9 months for the same charges. The one born in 2001 was convicted of aiding and abetting a felony firearms offence, and he received a seven-month prison sentence. Meanwhile, Grandpa got one of 1 year and 2 months for firearm offences, but he wasn't charged with terrorism, which I find really strange because he gets the firearms charges, but not the terrorist intent, even though he's the one supplying the home addresses of the targets.
Yeah. So a load of esoteric neo-Nazis that were clearly planning militant attacks, said they were planning that, wanted to kill people based on their own fascist ideology, even made guns and tested them. Not one of them got more than 3 years in prison. That is insane. You get about 3 years for a fist fight in stupid England. That is crazy.
Yeah. And like I said, the really depressing aspect of this is all of those politicians they were targeting who were then in government are no longer in government. And the party that two of these guys, Meritfield and Niemann, were a member of, is now in government. And that party controls the Justice Ministry, the Interior Ministry, and the Speaker of Parliament post, as well as several other posts. So it's really depressing. And, like, I think this is really important to ram home, because, like, right now, obviously, everyone's getting very excited and agitated about the American elections and, you know, the looming future of Trump. But actually, despite a lot of self-congratulatory stuff about Europe, European countries have got more far-right parties in government right now than ever before, well, not since the mid-20th century. You've got Italy, you've got Finland, Sweden, you've got the Sweden Democrats, not necessarily in government, but in like a powerful position. We've had Denmark's had Dansk Folkeparti coming in and off, you know, coming on and off.
Netherlands as well.
Yeah, yeah, we've had Wilders, Austria. It's, and obviously let alone places like Hungary and stuff, it's really quite frightening, the power of these guys. And despite the attempt to sort of move image away from the origins of these groups, they're really still born of exactly the same, you know, violent street movement, far right racists that they always were.
Very fucked up situation. So all eyes on Finland if you want to look into where these groups are going. If these groups have managed to get like 3 years, you know, if I was a weird neo-Nazi occultist or whatever, and I was in Finland and I was like, well, they just planned all that and they got 3 years, I'd be like, yeah, let's go. Like, why not? Like, what's the risk? And Finnish prisons, you know, they're not exactly the same as they are in the rest of Europe. I think they're akin to like Swedish prisons, which, you know, we have flats in England that are worse than the conditions they have. So, yeah, very interesting situation.
Definitely more mold.
Yeah, definitely. All right, mate. That's really interesting. Thank you very much. Where can people get hold of your work and find out more? And I really do think people should hit you up because you're doing some amazing work on this. Like, so few people go into the nitty gritty on stuff like this. So yeah, where can people get hold of you?
So I have a Twitter. I very rarely post on it, unfortunately. Which is just my name, Pierre Vo. After Twitter. So PIERREVAUX. But also I work at the moment for an organization called Center for Information Resilience that does a lot of war crimes investigation work. So like Myanmar Witness is one of their big projects, and I work on the Ukraine stuff for them and also some far right investigations. But yeah, Twitter is probably the best place to get hold of me. But yeah, unfortunately I don't post too much.
Yeah, that's the best thing. Fuck posting. But if you want to get in touch, you can find you there. All right, mate. Thanks very much, man. That was Skeleton Key, a popular front project focused on contemporary far-right militant groups. Music by Sam Black. Sound mix by Splicing Block. If you pirated this episode, alright, but please consider supporting at patreon.com/popularfront. We are entirely independent, grassroots conflict journalism. No one owns us, no one has a single share. We do not take money from bastards.